Hello and welcome to the 47th episode of the Coastal Noise Podcast. This episode is with Chris Hartfield, or as he is known by his Native American name, Chris Iron Lightning Boy Hartfield. Today on the show, we talked a lot about Native American cultures, heritage, primitive conflicts of primitive living in a modern society that is run with consumer capitalism, religion as a political tool, those kinds of things. Very deep, very thought-provoking material. We really rode the wave with this one, and I had a fantastic time doing it. As far as announcements goes, of course, if you want to hear more podcasts, you can go to the coastalnoise.com website, click on the podcast. I plan on having a new blog up, every intention of writing another music roundup like I did on the last blog entry, I believe it was, and featuring some artists that I saw over the past weekend, which included the Tall Boys. I saw Grayson Caps with the guitarist from Willie Sugar Caps. Once again, Eddie Dixon performed along with Roscoe Bandana down at the Irish Coast Pub for Ben Kaufman's birthday / anniversary of the bar. And that was a fantastic time, very packed out. And there was also another artist there from Asheville who I believe, I'll have his info in the blog, so I don't want to pronounce his name wrong or anything like that. So I have every intention of doing that, so that should be up very soon. Of course, you can go to the music page. You can go to any of the accounts to follow Coastal Noise, Twitter, Facebook, or me, anywhere that I'm located at. And I just want to say to anybody out there who thinks that they have topic or material that is interesting in any way, or that is something that you think is educational for people to hear, as this episode was for me and Chris, that we believe is something that's dear to our hearts and something worth sharing. If you ever feel like there's something like that out there that would be worth putting on as a podcast, you can email the Coastal Noise account and we'll take a look at it, see what you got. You know, I'm totally open to whatever it is that's out there that gets people thinking. So without further ado, let's begin the episode. This is Coastal Noise Podcast, episode number 47.
What? Batteries.
We're talking about
just technology and the way it's progressed, and I think that'll have a lot of pull in, like, our conversation that we're going to have today, just about Native American cultures and being primitive.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much right out the gate when I pulled up, you know, we've been hanging out for a couple hours now, and I mean, right out the gate, it always, and that's been like a common, like, reoccurring theme with me and you, is just being able to talk about that kind of an ancient way. And I think one of the reasons that we're here talking about that stuff is because we both feel that it's kind of being sapped out of our country when it was kind of the roots of our country for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's something that was kind of swept under the rug very quickly and in a lot of time ways ruthlessly. Like, if there's a real popular book called Howard Zinn's People's History of America, I think it's what it's called. And okay. It goes all the way back from, you know, British rule to where everybody comes over here. Christopher Columbus's explorations, the adventures and the exploration that they did on America itself, you know, their treatment of the Indian cultures, what things were done for the sake of Christianity, you know, in the name of Christianity.
Yep.
And which is another thing that bothers me about it being swept under the rug, not just as a people itself, but as its, for what its religious aspects were, of a very primitive, more natural, in tune to nature kind of thing, that sometimes I think Christianity struggles to relate to and have a similar tie as well. They explore a lot of the common themes, although I think all religions kind of touch on that at some point or another.
Okay.
In terms of whether it's a God figure or what have you. And at the same time, I think it's all a little bit interconnected. But where the problem is when that was when those things get used as a motive, almost a political motive.
Right.
To whether it's in this case genocide on a people or for the gain of resources. I think this is definitely like a Christian kind of nation with different branches off of it. I don't really know fully like Methodist, Baptist and all like the major differences, but I think they all stem from like one kind of central ideal that creates the ideologies for the mass everything in this country.
Okay.
And I think that politically people have been in office to use that to put us in situations for gain, for gain of the country.
Understood. I believe in that a lot. I honestly think we all came from a common place. May not be a person. I see it as a spirit. They see it as a spirit. When I say they, I mean Native. One spirit. Not controlling everything, but the creator of everything. So I see some similarities with Christianity, walking the Native path. I see a lot of similarities, see a lot of contradictions. So it's a lot of black and white, a lot of shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
It's for us to sift through, for us to figure out on our own. We will get help from the spirits. That's what I believe. You're being led. You're being led by something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a hugely individual experience too. No matter what religion you're into or what kind of faith you pull from, I think it's hugely, there's a certain point where people have to stop going with whatever is being presented to them,
right,
and do a little bit of that searching themselves, basically.
Yeah. Soul searching, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think religious organizations have to be real careful of that, because there's a certain point where I think it's healthy for a human to have that own development for themselves, as opposed to being told, well, no, like this is already been foretold. This is in our books. This is, you know, everybody agrees with it. Talk to Johnny, talk to Bill. Like,
here it is. We wrote it down. Believe it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and that could be poisonous. And for what reason? For the sake that person doesn't continue on with that religious practice to the degree of which you want them to.
Right.
You know, it doesn't all have to be just a straight shot. It doesn't all have to be one way.
Right.
I think that would be incredibly ignorant for an organization or a person to say that this is exactly it. This is how it is, you know?
Right.
And to just close the box right there, and you live in that for the rest of your life.
You see,
and you
that
put that on your
more.
Kids, and the yeah. kids put that into their kids, and it's this cycle, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
it's been changed from the beginning, from the discovery. It's been changed.
Mm-hmm.
Spirituality, I think, in my opinion, there's more than one way. But it's a common goal almost to where you're trying to get in your spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
When you bring something over that's foreign, that there's not a Bible, there's not a text, there's only a belief, there's only a faith, there's only a hope, then there's only a way of life. How you live that spirituality every day would be the Native way.
Mm.
What came over from Europe to the modern day Americas, which was just land before it was America. It was just land. It was just earth. May have been a different word than earth, but I'm not too familiar with that word, so I'm not going to call it. But back then it was just earth, just land. When Christianity came over, or Roman Catholicism, any of that, when that came over, it was something brand new to the people that were already living here. That's my big thing, is that there's a big change. There's something that happened that took us away from a primitive way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Or walk in a spiritual path, a Native path.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have things to read. They didn't have things to read. They brought literature over. I see it as a plus. I also see it as a curse, gift and a curse.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of balance.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think that, you know, you're talking about Native American peoples and them not being used to what everything of the British, the French, what would soon be become New Age American society.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that experience of those things. But and those people kind of put it on them like, this is how it's going to be now. You're going to adopt to this or you're going to die. Which caused a lot of death naturally, and this new blending of societies between the two for who is still here and still who holds on to that like you do and your family does. But at the same time, it's also this, you know, the fact that we're not primitive, you know, is just looking at one group of people that were still primitive. And then you have this other group of people who, you know, just because of where the world was technically at the time, those two societies couldn't interact.
Correct.
And then we had boats that come along that can handle this overseas journey. And it just so happens that on America's land, what would be North America, that those people, and South America too, but just all those people were not as, air quotes, technically advanced or whatever, you know, advanced as the culture that was on the other side of the world on this other giant island, you know, Europe and, you know, Asia and all these kind of things. For some reason on that part of the world, so much more was going on. And it just so happened that technology got to the point where those two parties could interact. But when that party from Europe and all that side came over, it was just too much to be integrated at one time. And it ended up killing a lot of people as a result, yeah. You know, just because. And it's not just the fact of what they had, not the resources and the technology. It's the mentality. It's the different levels of consciousness
okay. That
goes on in this society versus this society.
Right.
And that's why we had violence. That's why, you know, we had ignorance of, no, you have to adopt this and no, we're not. And that, you know, that got a lot of people killed. Yeah. And just the mentality that somehow that other culture is lesser than the other and that they should be extinct.
Right.
And don't forget, you know, the fact that their medicines are different. The diseases that got brought over from Europe. There's a fantastic book called Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Okay.
You know, that whether it's smallpox or whatever else, you know, just so many things that it's just crazy to think about that. It was just where we were all humans on the planet at the time. But for some reason, this side was this way and this was this way, and when they came together, only one side.
It's interesting,
you know. It's like we're giant organisms,
yeah,
just like anything else that are consuming and living, procreating in whatever way we can,
right?
And instinctually. And then there's the question of, is that the way it's supposed to be? Are we supposed to have a higher level of consciousness to actually recognize that And realize that hate is just going to expand more hate, whereas peace and good could do much more for humanity as a whole.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the big eye-opener, and it's something small, it's something I think about. Just imagine, we say primitive, we mean ground, animal, no bricks, no stucco, no cement, no metal. We don't have electricity. So imagine that. Imagine living that way for thousands of years or more than that. And then next thing you know, somebody brings something called light. You know what a fire is. You know what that thing is burning, those sticks burning.
Mm.
But what's this electricity
that you're harnessing and making portable?
What, like, you're a Native American. You're living in a teepee. You're skinning buffalo hides, you know, you're tanning them, you're smashing the brain, you're wiping it all over,
taking
the
it leather. For everything it's worth.
And next thing you know, there's this thing called light. There's this religion called Christianity. There's this person named Jesus and this other person named God. We've got a person for the spiritual name, and it's Wakantanka. The Great Spirit, the One, is what it boils down to. So we have a belief system. We don't have it written down in a book. We don't have electricity. So this comes over and it's a shock. I like to call it the first culture shock, because it's a literal culture shock. You have new things being introduced to you that have never been there, and you have people speaking a language to you that you've never heard.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, some way, there was someone that understood it. Interaction started happening.
Mm-hmm.
Socialism started happening. It wasn't all bad at the beginning. I know that. There were bad times. There were fights. There were wars. There were Europeans coming over, getting in battles with natives and not knowing what they were getting into. Natives getting in battles with Europeans, not knowing what they're getting into. And lots of stories of brave Europeans. Lots of stories of brave Native Americans. So, like you said, you have like people clashing in many different ways, good and bad. A lot of balance there.
Mm-hmm.
But my biggest thing was, think about not having electricity, and then all of a sudden you see this thing called light.
Mm-hmm.
It's just automatically invented.
Mm-hmm.
Or thought of. That's a big culture shock. That's a big change in life.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention just the religion. I mean, the spiritual side's the biggest part, in my opinion. But, you know, it's just kind of tough. It's kind of tough to think about, because there's so many different directions it can go.
Yeah. You're talking about, like, in terms of how it's good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
and what kind of life you lead as a result.
Right.
of what you're thinking.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I know one thing we were talking about earlier is about technology and about at what point it's a little too much or you know, we talked about balance and having the right amount of each. Whether it be like going camping and, you know, people bringing too much to go camping and kind of defeating the purpose. Me, when I'm out here in places like this, I've kind of over the years gotten in touch with, like when I'm out this far into the woods, I have some family that like live out in the country or whatever. And, just from spending a lot of time there as a child and to what I understand now as an adult, going out into places like that, I can almost immediately connect with something that is so primitive. It's the primitive nature, like the wind. It's on the wind, you know what I mean? There's no hum of everything that is a residual effect of technology. Cars. Understood. Cars put it off. Cell phones put it off.
Yep.
Everything. And I notice it a lot more, you know. I can just, and it draws me to it a lot, you know.
Spiritual connection between human and nature. It's much bigger than what we see.
Mm-hmm. But also equally difficult to commit to in a modern society.
Of course.
Of work and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. We're brainwashed.
Maybe.
It's different.
Yeah. Yeah. It is different. And, you know, this kind of brings me back to the other thought that I had when we were talking about, of how bad it is. You know, I think there's a balance for everything. And then maybe we're, you know, if you looked at a timeline of all of humanity, we lived pretty much primitive for the most of our existence. And it's just been in this last couple hundred years that through the Industrial Revolution and all these kinds of things, the explosion of North America and just everything as a whole, you know, we've had a big explosion, but it's been in this last 20 or 30 years when things like laptops, computers, cell phones, you know, they showed up on the scene and then they exploded in terms of how efficient they were, how portable, how affordable, to the point where everybody seems to have a smartphone now.
Yep.
And a laptop connected to the internet, pulling, I mean,
everywhere you go.
Yeah. And the internet's like, to me, the motherboard. What else is there that's been as incredible as an invention? I saw in a magazine, a tech magazine, like a couple of years back, giving like Netflix, like the tech award of the year. Netflix is huge. A lot of people have Netflix.
Love it.
And it's awesome. And they were the first to do it. And now they're putting series out where they put the whole series and you can just watch any episode at any time or whatever.
Easily accessible. But
that wouldn't be around if we didn't have the internet. The internet is because the reason that we have that.
Right.
You know, maybe we'll have a new wave of political activism or a way of seeing who we can put into power through the internet versus major news corporations.
Right.
Know? Which is, you know, we're coming out of generations that was all, it was like all the resources they had, that or the papers. But sometimes the papers were fed or supported or created by the major news corporations. And corporations are who have the money, the most money in our country. So they're the ones who get to lobby the most money.
Right.
And that goes to a person who they want to, when, if you're in power, remember us, you know, you can look at GM or a Wall Street company to see like what they put up for presidents as they were running their campaigns.
Yeah.
And they're so wealthy. GM can go, here's $28 million to you, the guy in the blue. And here's, you know, 8.7 to you, just in case you win. Like, we want you to win, but if you don't, if we can't get you in,
here's loads.
Don't forget us, other dude, who we're also giving millions of dollars to. You know,
yeah.
If I was talking about this yesterday, if our presidential system was based on the one right person to run our country for the better of its people and its system,
right?
You know, with as many people as we have, that should be like a really diverse thing if it was supposed to go to the most honest, best person to do the job or whatever, most capable. But when you look at our record of the presidents we've had, how is it that we have three Bushes with opportunity, two of them that were president, one of them that may, you know, if you tried really hard. Like, what is the odds that the number one dude in our country comes from the same family three times?
Yeah.
What about the Kennedys? Like, what about all these other, they're not supposed to be dynasties, but when you look at it, it looks kind of like a dynasty. Like, they're the same people that are in the same families, going to the same fraternities, skulls and bones or whatever.
Yeah. I have some strong opinions about all that. It scares me how real all that is.
Mm-hmm.
Politics, corporations, big rigs, owning everything, running behind the scenes, running the media. It's a lot of control and power over something, in my opinion, that is pointless.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's our life, but I see it as our life today, almost in denial of what it should have been. Like, our life today, I'm in denial that this is even real because of where we came from as a people before electricity. Before things showing up, disease, horses, guns, firepower, trading, buying, selling, corporations owning.
Consumerism.
It's scary to me because my opinions and what I feel tells me it's pointless. Do we need it? We do now.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't back then.
And that brings full circle around to what I had started off that I totally forgot about, this idea that we've had that period for so long and now we have this huge explosion of technology, and it's like, is it too much for what we're supposed to be able to handle at one given time, or are we in the process of some sort of crazy evolution?
I think
for humanity, and are we you know, going to get to the point where we become technology in a sense, instead of being the people that assimilate technology, whether it was the first time that somebody said, let's tie this to this stick and throw it, instead of chasing buffalo with our hands, to a gun, to what, shooting projectiles out of our own arm or whatever. That's way down the way. But what I'm saying is like, how far before like this exponential rate that technology has exploded, where we were, you know, you had to be connected to something to have this giant phone in one central station, to having these really incredibly small things that fit into your pocket,
right,
that are capable of the internet and
yeah.
everything else, you know. I record podcasts all the time with my phone as a backup, and I can still make that work just because of what I can do with computers and all these kinds of things. I mean, it's
right.
what you can do from out of the palm of your hand now is incredible. And at what point, like the, you know, I use this analogy a while back ago, and I still like to use it, that like the, when Apple did the latest edition of whatever phone is, was a while back, but like they did the A1 chip or something like that.
Okay.
And it was like super tiny. And it's like things just get smaller and smaller, and it's going to get to the point where it's, why can't we make those chips, those computer chips that store all these this information, the size of blood cells and produce millions or billions of them.
Right.
And then just put them into your body.
You are the technology.
You think Google, what is, and Google just tells you because it's already in your body. Like,
I get where you're coming from.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
they're doing it to track us with healthcare.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be able to read all your vital signs and everything about you. Like,
they can scan a little laser over our healthcare injection mm-hmm. and tell us everything about our lives, from our social security number to our blood type.
Mm-hmm. You know, and after what point does like our thinking and our level of consciousness begin to become consumed by technology to the point where we don't really have to think about what's good and what's bad. We just process things. We're very neutral. We're almost computer minded. Like a computer right. doesn't give a shit what happens. Like if we were to get struck by lightning in this thunderstorm right now or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's just a computer,
right?
But it has the functions and it just does things and it does them effectively. Why can't we just be walking around? Or what's to, you know, say stop us from eventually being just things that walk around doing things, doing them very efficiently, and just accepting things as the way they are, you know?
Yeah.
And which would remove a lot of emotional pull, and some would argue that's what makes us human. And I'm not saying that that's where I hope that we're going or anything. I totally
just
don't.
Wonder if,
I don't know
if
actually
we're going in that direction.
Right, right. I yeah. wonder if that's where we're going. You know,
kind of like an iRobot thing.
Yeah, yeah, in a way. And,
I get
and,
that.
But the question is would that be a bad output or a good one? Because if we're thinking mechanically and we're programmed just to make the place better, because that's all most people are trying to do. They're trying to make well in the world, and they want to leave better for, you know, everything else. But yet we still have this problem that we can't seem to get over of war and
right.
famine and
right.
all those kinds of things. And if our technology got so good that we integrated it into ourselves
right.
and ran very methodically and precise and without emotional backlash, you know, we might turn the planet around.
Right.
Or we might become aliens and fly away. I don't know. Like
I see it like this.
Or we might destroy ourselves.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. When you say they're trying to make it, they're always trying to make it better, be innovative to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as they're trying to make everything easier, not so much better.
Mm.
It seems better, but is everything that's easy right for you?
Mm.
That's my view of just about everything. If it's easy, it's probably not right.
Mm.
Like signing up for a payday cash loan that's $1,500 more than what you make, but you give them your paycheck and they give you $1,500 on top of the money you just gave them. So they're giving you $2,500. Because it's easy, is it better?
Mm.
It's easy to sign up. It's easy to get the extra $1,500. But in the long run, you're going to be paying this amount of money to pay them back.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, it's not easier. Or technically, it's not better. It's
yeah.
it's easier.
Because
mm-hmm. you didn't have to wait to get that money, or you didn't have to wait to learn something, or you didn't have to practice to learn something. A lot of things can fall in that line, like someone's golf swing. If their golf swing's terrible, they can go on TV and check out this new gimmick, this new club that they're showing that it's going to give you 10 yards more to your swing because it's easier.
Mm.
But is it better? Are you actually fixing your golf swing with this?
Yeah.
Are you actually fixing your life with this app
mm.
or with this computer chip in your body? Is it making it easier? I don't think the innovators are thinking that. I really feel like they're thinking, is it going to make everything simple, nonchalant, and easy?
And what does that do to your ego when you have everything easy and given to you over time?
You feel good about everything. You really do.
And that everything will get taken care of in a way. You know?
Feel like it's going to, but what if it doesn't? How are you going to react?
Yeah.
Psychologically, how are you going to react? You're going to go, oh crap, I can't do this because I'm used to this app doing this for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't read a map anymore. There's too many roads on it.
Yeah.
Because Siri knows how to sift through the roads and get me to the quickest spot.
Mm-hmm.
Quickest route.
Yep.
It's weird. Balance.
There's a great joke that Rogan does about, you know, if everything failed, you know, post-apocalyptic world or whatever, if I gave you a knife and a lighter, like how long before you can send me an email from the woods, you know?
Right. You're going to have to go back to the pony days.
Right. Would that be such a bad thing, you know?
That's my thought.
That's exercise, it's and so connection bad. With a living creature and all that stuff, enjoying, you know. I probably wouldn't want to ride a motorcycle as much if like I could ride a horse everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or an elephant. I'd be down for that. I could get through some traffic with an elephant. Hell, I could knock over a train if I tried hard enough. Like if it was moving slow enough, might be able to teach my elephant to kick that thing.
Yeah.
You never know. I haven't tried it.
Elephants are smart.
They are. I got a Nat Geo magazine in yesterday about, and it says, think like a dolphin.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, I've been waiting for this for so long. I didn't even know I wanted this, but
I would love to swim as fast as they do.
You know, that guy I was telling you about, we were talking about sensory deprivation chambers before the show, right before we sat down, which we can tie into like some ceremonial stuff with like the Lakota people and stuff like that. But the guy I was telling you about, John C. Lilly, the neuropsychologist who invented the chambers, he did a lot of research. Like his other thing besides sensory deprivation was communications with dolphins.
All right.
He was hugely into that.
Kind of like the whales.
Mm-hmm.
They communicate on a level that we do with their own sounds, their own voices.
Mm-hmm.
Elephants think on a level that we do. They can look at one another and know what one's feeling. If they need help, if they need comfort, if they need love, if they need affection.
Mm-hmm.
They think that way. And it's proven. And you can take an elephant away from its mother as a baby and it'll always remember the scent, the thoughts, the feelings, and they'll run right back to the mother however many years later.
Mm.
It's a fact. I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. I find that really interesting.
And then you have chimpanzees, certain types of birds. I mean, they're all just different levels of consciousness.
Yes.
What I just don't understand is like, why are we the way we are, you know? Mm-hmm. Or is it selfish of me to think that we're even that fantastic? You know what I mean? Like, are we really that above everything else? Or are we just this weird mutation of something that kind of went off the racetracks, but
we're the aliens. Are we the aliens?
I don't know.
I feel like it.
You know, if technology got to the point and we, the planet was that bad off, or we have the ability to go somewhere else, the universe is huge. Why not just leave it behind? The world will continue, and if life started here, then it'll create itself again after a time once everything's been vacated from it.
Right.
Or also you have the idea that whatever left the planet originally turned around and put something back on the planet to restart it again.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of, I'm sure, in ancient traditions or Native American cultures or just a lot of really ancient religious ceremonies, not ceremonies, but tales of beginnings, you know.
Right.
There's these god figures that are very similar to people that kind of sow the earth somehow or almost like plant a seed and forth come humans.
Understood.
You know?
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, if God is such in the image of, or man is such in the image of God, you know, could there be a chance that there's a reason for that, you know?
Right. I think so. There's a reason for everything. And that's a statement I've heard a lot. And it's always true, no matter what. You can come back to the bad things that happened in your life. You can come back to the good things that happened in your life and sit there and find reason for them all after the fact. In the middle of it, it's hard to see. You're blinded by life. You're blinded by what's happening to you. You're living in it. It's kind of hard to take it all in. A lot of people have trouble taking things in and enjoying themselves, enjoying the atmosphere, the environment. I find that a big part of life is you're always searching to make things real, to make things last while you're in the moment, so that you're not looking back and thinking, oh, why did I do this if it was bad? Or, oh, why didn't I take more time to soak it all in, take it all in? It's time's always happening. Time's always progressing forward. Can't go back in time. I'm sure someone's going to do it one day. I feel like they are, but it hasn't happened yet. No Back to the Future yet.
Maybe. I don't know. That's a whole nother rabbit hole right there.
Yeah. Technology kicking in, though.
That's true. But like you were saying, like creating that environment of what it's living in, like that connection I feel like whenever I'm out here, you know, as opposed to somewhere else, you know, it makes me wonder like how much humanity, if they even need that or if they benefit from it to a certain degree. What I'm wondering is, you know, with the Native American cultures is what I like is like in Black Elk Speaks, like he talks about a lot about his first major vision, his great vision in his life. He became very ill and he had this powerful vision. And then from that day on very various periods in his life with more and more prominence, he had these experiences that he couldn't explain. But they were always experiences that were very specific and detailed. And he began, you know, telling his elders about it and all this kind of stuff. And they recognize that. They understand where he's coming from. He doesn't fully understand it because, you know, he was a young man. But they treat it a different way, where you go in to a city and tell somebody you went out in the woods and had a vision or whatever. They're going to ask you what you were on, or like, dude, my coffee's getting cold. Like I got a meeting to run to and all this kind of stuff.
I can't hang out with you anymore. You did something crazy out in the woods.
Yeah. Like,
what was that?
Like, what are you talking about? Are you off your rocker? You know?
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, and does that come from being out in nature so much? Does nature have something to share with us that we're supposed to be in touch with, that we're supposed to keep up with, you know?
Yeah.
And if we fall away from it too much, you kind of come out of touch with whatever it is that's supposed to be speaking to us. You know, people see God in our modern society. A lot of people see God as this other thing, you know, almost humanized in a lot of ways. But what's to say that you can't see God as nature as a whole?
Right.
And that being in touch with that nature aspect is just as important as going to a church every Sunday or something like that, you know?
Yeah, understood. I see where you're coming from. The whole thing about nature, seeing it as one, seeing it as a whole, seeing it as an art, something that was created by the Great Spirit, Wakantanka, God, Jesus, whatever name you want to give that spirit, that being, if it's human, if it's, I hate to say it, but that's just how it comes out. It's hard to explain. I've looked at nature. I've looked at the trees, looked at the sky. I've looked at the grass, rivers, mountains. One of the most beautiful of, I think, of the creation.
I'm a mountain guy myself.
Mountains.
Yeah.
And you think, my God, on a sunny day, on a rainy day, on a cold, snowy day, sleet, you look at it and think, wow, could this be God? Could this be the one, the Great Spirit? Everything that I see right in front of me, could it just all be something blinding me from it? and telling me, no, this isn't it, but this is something he or it or the spirit created. Could it be?
We were talking earlier about how we've both been to Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah.
And walking around there, that's a city that's just almost trapped by mountains.
Yeah.
And I remember walking around so much, like, the first time I went couch surfing, and like I just walked around the town. Like I just had a day where I went, a couple days, like one day I biked, one day I walked, just walking all around.
Yeah.
And everywhere you look, there's a mountain there, you know, yeah. off in the distance. But when I mean off in the distance, I mean, it's still a big mountain. Like you, nothing about the scope is missed. Right. And I just would wonder to myself, like, how do people walk around mad? Like, how can your problems be as significant, you know, they just make your problems seem so insignificant when you see that of nature, and it's just, you're completely surrounded by it.
You have nothing to worry about around you. I mean, you could be worried about some mountain lions, but what are the chances, you know, that they're going to be hungry for you? So,
but I'm just thinking things like, you know, stupid relationship problems, or, you know, you didn't get that raise, or, just whatever mundane, trivial thing of like your team didn't win that week or something like that. You know, it's like
nature almost settles it for you. Just about.
Yeah.
I feel like it settles it for you. It makes you think it's not that important.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like it is. You want it to be because you want to care.
Yeah. You want to be wrapped up in something.
Right. You want to feel like you care about something. And something means something to you.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. When you get wrapped up in it, like you said, you may need a walk in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't think that's what they need. They think other things. Some people. I won't say most. Some people.
Yeah. But we do have a culture that has, in its past, run into troubles of whatever ailment they have. And then they turn, whether it's prescriptions or... some sort of, you know, cigarettes or something like that, or coffee, or I just need more of this or more of that, when really they, you know, like you said, who knows? I mean, why can't you just walk out there, you know,
take a breath of fresh air?
Yeah.
You can, walking the native path means just that. The native path isn't saying, no, you can't have this beer. No, you can't have that. The native path is you saying, no, I won't have this beer. No, I won't smoke that. They, you know, if you're being led by your spirits, if you're being led by your ancestors and they're talking to you and you're listening, you don't need anything earthly. Goes back to, do we need it today? I'm going to say no, because I'm extreme. And I could say no, but when you're living today, your mind's going to tell you, yeah, I need that beer to settle down. And I'm going to sit on my couch and drink it. And I'm going to watch this show on TV while I do it. That's going to be my relaxation. I see it as an adaptation to what we have today. I also feel like nature is pretty much the only cure. It calms you down. You don't need a Xanax. It makes you hyper. You don't need Adderall. It does all of it for you. We're human, and we're going to do what's in society today. I know people that don't, and those are the people that I envy. I would like to be like them. I would like to be pure, walk in the native path, know the language, grow my hair out, and... don't touch alcohol. Don't touch tobacco. You don't need it. What is the need? Are you so caught up in your life that you need a pack a day to calm down? Or can you sit down and think, I'm alive. My heart's beating. My lungs have oxygen. My brain's thinking. It's not intoxicated with smoking alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do that? I think everybody can.
It just gets to a point, though, if they're dependent on it, where their body, whether whatever you're thinking or not, will have a chemical reaction, a biological reaction, you know?
Right.
But then there also comes the factor, like, can you use your mind to settle that, to get through that?
Right.
There's a really humorous story from, like, I believe, like, the 70s era, when, like, experimental drugs like LSD and stuff like that were starting to come about. And American scientists who were kind of, you know, it's not like what it is today is its classification or anything like that. Yeah. It was being used for scientific research and these things and here and there. So anyway, these scientists started getting into, like, Hinduism and going over to India and meditating and learning about altered states of consciousness through, you know, meditation, or just, like, chilling yourself out and becoming the ultimate focused person or whatever like that. And, okay, you know, they would go over, because at the time when all, you know, back in the 70s, when, like, psychedelics and all this kind of stuff started coming about as, like, this thing that was changing a lot of people's perception, or marijuana or anything like that, a lot of people were a mixed camp, I'm sure. But, yeah, like, the people that were for it were saying, this is changing our consciousness, this is taking us to et cetera, et cetera. Well, they go over to India to find the other half of it, of just meditation and worship and all this kind of stuff. And they start learning from these other guys that are establishing that kind of thinking. And they're all saying, you don't need these things.
You know? Have the power to do it already.
Right. And there's a story where a scientist, I don't remember, it might have been like Richard Albert or somebody like that, who went to study, learned to meditate with this guru, and gave him a bunch of acid.
Yeah.
And the guy ate it, and, like, they agreed to sit there and meditate, and, like, nothing became of anything. He's like, and the guru's like, you need to go back to where you're from and rethink what you're doing, because this is not the way. I have proven to you here. The man goes back, the scientist goes back, starts thinking, did he trick me? Did he pocket the stuff? Was this all a hoax? You know, because he's still not sure if this higher states of consciousness and meditation through a natural means is possible and all that, and through worship and just being the ultimate, you know, for yourself, removing the ego, learning to get rid of all that.
Yeah.
So he gets a lot more and goes back and is like, I'll show him. And the guy's like, look, I've already told you, like, you need to rethink this. This is not the way.
No trick.
And he's like, well, show me again. So he shows him and makes clearly, presents to him that he is consuming the drugs that he has brought him. And then they sit there, meditate for a while. A little while goes by. The guru takes his blanket that he's wearing and wraps it over his head and starts moaning. And the scientist goes, you know, he's thinking, what have I done to this guy? Like, this is going to kill him. Like, I gave him enough to, like, mess with the most experienced of people from back in my states.
Yeah.
Freaking out. The guy takes the blanket off and starts laughing at him. I said, I told you, go home. You have a new way of life that you need to be looking at, you know?
Right.
So, but just a very popular story from back then of something that happened that I've always kind of hung on to. And I think about it all the time, you know, and I, in a lot of ways, I think just of how much I appreciate nature that, and from my own experiences of meditation and being pretty interested in Buddhism, studying it a good bit, you know, through college, and just other books that are whatever that I've picked up, and just learning from other people. You know, you have to learn someone's culture to really get further progressed into it. And that's another big thing, is like just people not being accepting of, or just, you know, set in their ways or whatever.
Yeah. They don't understand it. You hit the nail on the head when you started talking about pharmaceuticals, manufactured drugs, something man-made.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need it. You don't need it to have a vision. You don't need it to have an experience. Does it help? You'll get some things from those drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll have a bad trip. Sometimes you'll see things you don't want to see, hear things you don't want to hear. If it's completely spiritual and for a spiritual reason, you're going to get what you need and what you were supposed to get out of it. But it also, there's the other end of the spectrum where you have walking the native path is doing everything nature's way, the native way, the Lakota way. That would be following our ceremonies. The naming ceremony being one, doesn't involve anything strenuous or any visions or any usage of anything mind changing. Peyote is a big thing in Native culture, Mexican culture. It's very, very prominent. It can help take you to that level of, all right, I'm seeing things that are divine, seeing things that are foreshadowing or summing up my life. The medicine men and medicine people that my dad talked about earlier, most of them being directly related to me, have done something called the Sundance.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that, because that's one ceremony that I've always been pretty interested in.
It's a sacred ceremony. Very sacred. Sacred, I think, doesn't even describe it. It's beyond sacred to me, in my mind. It's not a coming of man. It's a coming of a warrior. Someone who's seen what's planned for them in their life, instead of just walking through life thinking what's next. They've seen what they need to do and have a vision and have a route to take.
Through exhaustion, right?
It is. That's the ultimate. That's where you get your vision, is at the end of your exhaustion. At, you know, you're, to be honest, you're close to dying. Pretty much it's 4 days of starvation, fasting, praying. It's not considered starvation because you're fasting. You're doing it for a purpose. No water, no food, 4 days. You're not supposed to make it 3 days without water. They proved that wrong. I've never done the Sundance. I want to. It's one of my future goals, is to be able to do that, to grow my hair out, learn the language, get my vision. The ultimate goal is to get a vision. Your vision can be anything from what you're supposed to do, a foreshadow of what's going to happen in your life, what to be aware of, or it could be just a simple animal that was brought to you that symbolizes the rest of your life. It's nothing specific. It's nothing that you can create in your mind that's going to come to you. Nothing that I can create in my mind that's going to come to me, because it was meant for me, only me, but not created by me. It's created by ancestors, people of my past, the warriors that died in battle, the warriors that tried to preserve this culture, the Lakota Sioux culture, Cheyenne River, Lakota Sioux tribe. The history books, they don't explain it all. That's because we had a spiritual way of life that was ripped from us. And once we noticed that it was being ripped from us, we didn't tell anyone else about it. If the person wanted to know and truly respected the culture, they would be told. I wasn't told until I was about 21 or 22. I'm 28 now. I've known about my culture since I was 6 years old, and understood what it's about since 6 years old, and wondered, when will I get a Native American, a Sioux Indian name? When will I be honored? When will that happen? What do I have to do? How do I pray about that? Once I was told about visions, Sundance, and truly, you know, they explained it to me to where this is what it is, and I could feel like, oh, I read this in a book somewhere, but this was told to me by 100% Lakota Sioux medicine man. And he told me things that I can't tell you, that I won't, because of the spiritual world. That's how much it means to us. That's how spiritual the ceremony is. You won't witness it. My mom won't witness it. There's certain people that won't witness it. Not because of racism, but because they're not Native. It's that spiritual. The Sundance in itself is a 4-day event. You're sent with a medicine man. You go to Bear Butte. It's called Bear Butte. They did the ceremonies since forever, since we can recall. They've done the ceremonies on Bear Butte. It's a very spiritual place. Medicine men are only allowed up there to travel it, to hike to the top and to come back down. And they are the only ones that can be there during your fasting, during your vision quest. On the first day you get done with your vision, which is the fourth day. So you've gone and stayed out on this Bear Butte for nearly 4 days with no water and no food, and you haven't fallen asleep. You've stayed awake the whole time. You can't fall asleep. You can't drink water. You can't have food. You can't do drugs. You can't have anything to enhance your vision. So that answers the big question earlier about the acid, about the pharmaceuticals. It's natural, 100%. There is a way to meditate, and there is a way to have a vision without anything man-made. You get your vision while you're sitting out there, and at the very end, they take a shaved tree trunk that's, we'll say, about 10, 12, sometimes 18 feet high. They use sinew, which is, if it was native made, it was made from the stomach or the fat lining and the tendons of animals, deer, buffalo. And it's just string. The tendons peel into string after they dry, and you can roll them up into, you know, very, very tiny cylinders, making string that they make dream catchers or bow and arrow bows, strings out of. They tie up tobacco. They tie up buffalo skulls. They tie up any kind of offering, buffalo fat, to Wakantanka, the Great Spirit. So it's tied up at the top of this tree trunk, this big tree post. And the grandmothers are the ones that prepare all this. The elder women prepare all this for you. That fourth day, they bring that tree trunk out and they stand it up. And all these strings hanging down from it are for each person going through the Sundance together. They have eagle claws attached at the end of them, at the end of these strings. And at the very top of this post is your offerings. It's all offerings to the Great Spirit for whatever vision he's given you, for the family he's given you, for the tribe, for everything that's unity, for everything that's pure, white. White's a pure color. White means purity. So you're up at this post, and you get punctured with eagle claws just inside the nipples of your chest. Once they puncture it, it goes through, and the eagle claw, you can imagine maybe 2 inches to an inch and a half long, pierced through your chest on, you know, two claws through your chest. And I'd say, you know, 1/4 inch thick through the skin. You're attached to this for a reason. Once the ceremony, the chanting, the singing, and the dancing starts, is when you'll truly seal your vision. If you had a vision on Bear Butte on the mountain during the 3 days before coming out to the fourth day event, if you have your vision there, it's going to be intensified and set in stone at this part with the eagle claws and the dancing and the chanting. And you're pretty much leaning back with this post buried in the ground, pointed straight up in the air, your offerings above you, your family, your grandmothers, your aunties, your uncles, the medicine men, dancers, eagle feathers all around, leather all around, beaded work, quill work all around. You're surrounded by everything that's native. They start chanting, they start playing drums, they start singing music, the native tone that gets stereotyped all the time is in full effect. And it's not a stereotype. It's the real deal. You will rip those eagle claws out of your chest without touching them with your hands. You will eventually dance to the point of exhaustion. That brings us to the exhaustion point. Until those eagle claws rip out of your chest, you're going to fall back. And it's a separation of the society of today. I think that's what it means to me today, is the separation of the society of today. And you're starting your native path. You're walking the Lakota path, the Sioux Indian path at that point. I don't think you can do that until you do the Sundance. And I believe that my family would back me up 100% by saying that. So if you don't do the Sundance, if you don't know your language and can sing in your language and grow your hair out, you're not native. You're not Lakota Sioux. You will be accepted to an extent, but you're not a warrior. My dad's about as close as you can get to a warrior. The sacrifices he made in the Navy, they've honored him more than one time. That just goes to show you the next two steps puts him over the edge into native life. I want to be that close. I want to be someone who can share that story like I am now, but being the one who experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
So after that point, I'm sure there's more of the ceremony that I haven't been told yet, because they're not going to tell me everything. Those eagle claws are ripped out. You have the scars for life. You found your vision. You have your vision. If you didn't find a vision, you did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You fell asleep. You drank water. There's people that sneak in water. I've been told that. People that try to help because they're afraid of their brother or their cousin or their son dying. They don't want them to die. You're supposed to be the one to say no. If you fall into it and you fall asleep, you lose your vision. Your vision may be a dream at that point. There's a difference. And that was the big thing, is you have to do it right. Do everything right. That's the coming of a warrior, not a man, a warrior.
Mm.
Someone who knows the Lakota path, someone who knows the native path, not because they did the Sundance, but because of the life they lived up to the Sundance and what they learned from the Sundance. That's the big thing.
I have a couple of questions in regards to that.
Okay.
For people who don't have a vision, first of all, has anybody died from? I mean, how often do people die from it? I mean, people have died from it, right?
I know it's dangerous. I know there's been some deaths. I can't say how many, or that I know for a fact someone died. I've just heard.
Probably just pretty relatively small numbers. I mean, if somebody gives out,
you hear more people putting on a sweat lodge.
Yeah,
That's another ceremony. Sweat lodge is just a cleansing of the body, purification of the spirits. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that do it wrong. A lot of false natives, people that say they're native and they're not, but they want your money. They want your participation so that maybe they could keep doing it. Maybe they could keep fooling people into coming to this sweat lodge. What the problem is they kill people. They didn't mean to. They're not native, though. They don't know the right way to do it. They've just been told, and they messed up part of the equation. Just a simple part, and that part killed however many people in their sweat lodge, or 20 people in one sweat lodge, and they're all coming to think, oh, this is wrong. We don't need to be in here. They try to escape. The person who's not native, claiming they're native, tells them, no, this is the part where you have to endure. This is the part where you have to do this and do that. And they're probably wrong.
Yeah,
that's why people are dying.
Some of the process in some cases are to like go outside and purge.
Yep.
Or jump in the cold river or something like that, you know, different variations or whatever.
Right.
But there's a process that people have to keep to. And if you don't do it, and if you haven't been doing it for a long time, hundreds and hundreds of years or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, and you haven't been taught the way of that, you know, that's another thing that's huge is the oral tradition aspect of Native American culture. We were talking about how
religion,
how when a certain religion gets made and passed on, a lot of flaws can be made in the process of its repeating.
Right.
You know, was it written wrong or was it duplicated or were variations made or were the people that were writing it, did they make modifications, that kind of thing.
True.
So for the fact that Native American culture, like you were saying, didn't have literature and everything was more oral, you know,
yeah,
all 100%. Oral,
yeah,
you know, and which is, you know, it's interesting for us to be doing what we're doing here in that regards, you know,
right,
kind of taking that and putting it in a format that's modern, you know, the technology that we're kind of slightly talking against at the same time as creating a preservation in a way.
You're right. That's the balance. I don't want to be 50-50. I don't want to be lukewarm.
Mm-hmm.
I know that what I've learned through Christianity is you don't want to be lukewarm. You want to be hot or you want to be cold. That's what he wants. That's what he wants from you. He doesn't want you to be stagnant or lukewarm, right in the middle. That's where I disagree. I think you have to be lukewarm. You have to be 50-50 to see both sides, because there's always two sides. There's me saying technology, structures, it ruined ceremonies, or it ruined tradition, or it ruined history. But then me saying that it's completely false or out of place would be blasphemy, because of where we are today, how we're orally exchanging our thoughts, our spiritual thoughts,
mm-hmm.
the deep things. We're using technology to transfer that to everybody else. How could that be so negative? How could that be so wrong and misplaced?
Mm.
Then that other half of me says it is completely misplaced. Shouldn't be here because of the primitive side of me. The one that wants to be with nature.
Like, maybe we shouldn't even have to do this. This should be just a tribal thing that's passed down in small groups of people.
Yeah.
And if that small group of people branches out and goes somewhere else and has more smaller tribes and it's all interconnected, yep. It's supposed to live within that realm, you know.
Word of mouth, it gets out. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
You say something, someone's going to hear it.
Right.
Whether they're there or not, someone's going to hear it or hear of it. I'm not saying we have the capability of going back to that, going back to telling stories and, you know, one-on-one and letting it travel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying we can do that, but what if it was still that way and we haven't progressed, or we have a group of people that know that this technology exists, but decide not to use it. And they walk outside and start talking.
Yeah.
They don't record it. They don't send it out for everybody to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're not living a lifestyle that necessarily requires, it doesn't feel like there's an obligation of them to spread whatever gets said, you know?
Right.
You know, how many times have, you know, I can think of loads of time growing up that I'd be having a conversation with really close friends, you know, friends that know you so well that it's pretty easy to get into the deep stuff of life, you know,
yeah,
what the universe is doing, what is God, those kinds of things, yeah. You know, and having these deep conversations that you get lost in, that after an hour goes by and you go, man, what did we just come out of, you know?
Yeah.
It felt really important, you yeah. know, it felt huge, and you wanted more of that, you know, and but at the same time, we kind of live in a society where personally I felt I didn't know what I was supposed to do with all that information.
Yeah.
And it didn't, like, when I left that circle of friends to go back to doing whatever else, I wasn't living in a society that was reinforcing the importance of those thoughts and ideas and discussions or whatever.
True.
So then it gets lost a little bit, and then you just hit those veins occasionally where you come together with the right people at the right time and the universe gives you what you're looking for.
I think we share a lot of thoughts. We share a lot of, I want to say this, I want to say everything that I'm thinking because it's extremely important in my mind right now.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say this so bad, and I want to be accurate. I want to say everything that's important that I'm thinking. We don't always get to hit all those points.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way we think. It's the way we hear. It's the way we do. We want to say it all. We want to get it, hit the nail on the head and get it right and have deeper meaning. Feel that deeper meaning and feel like we've accomplished something. Somebody understands where I'm coming from. Somebody understands where you're coming from, and that's what feels important.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't always get to say all of it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of fleeting thoughts and fleeting moments. I think that plays a big part in what you do. You're catching it as it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we don't get into anything important or anything substantial or something that's going to make someone go, wow, I can't believe that they think that way, they feel that way. You're catching it, whether or not it's going to happen or not. You're catching it.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
If you're in the, like I said, the right place at the right time, you know, and 8:19. Good. We wrap up in like 10:15 or what?
Intermission.
We can do an intermission, yeah.
You want to grab your small guitar?
Yeah, we're going to take a little break for a little bit. We might come back, we might not, but we'll let you know for sure.
Cool.
We had just had a nice little break, and I think that was a good stretch that we had back there. So I think what we're going to do is probably end it now and this idea to maybe reconvene tomorrow, see if we can cover some more ground.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed every moment.
Yeah. Covered a lot of ground, so it's been very, very chill.
Yeah. And, laid back.
Yeah.
And really native.
Yeah. Yeah. Very primitive.
As close to it as we can get.
Yeah. And, I mean, this setting here was, like, ideal, perfect for that kind of conversation, so... I guess what we're going to do is just sign off. And is there anything you want to add in closing here? Or
just want to thank anybody and everybody that listens to this. That's the whole meaning of it. Get it out there. And thank you for coming to visit and sit down with me. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I really appreciate
it. I appreciate you having me and your whole family, like, just, you know, all hanging out. And from being able to hang out all day, you kind of absorb more of just the vibe and the culture and all the kinds of things, you know.
Right.
Not that all we did was like boil crawfish and hang out basically, right. But
coastal culture.
That's right.
We like to adapt and add a lot of different spices of life to our life. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's fun. It's very, very, very fun.
Yeah.
We had a good time.
Yeah. And just kind of throughout the day, being able to talk to you kind of as a precursor to this and all that kind of stuff, it definitely ramps up for the material we covered. And
yeah, no need for note taking, mental notes.
True that.
It's good to go.
Yeah. So I appreciate everybody listening. If you've made it all the way through to the end, this is material conversations like this that are always my favorite to kind of record and get out there. So. You know, if you've made it this far, of course it's kind of like a badge of honor if you can make it through an hour and a half of someone talking or whatever,
listen to us yap.
Yeah. Listening to us go at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I always like to say, if it's something that you enjoy talking about, then it's 100% chance that there's somebody out there who wants to hear it, you know, who enjoys listening to that that kind of material. So,
yeah.
So thanks everybody for listening.
And, yes. Thank you.
And I'm sure we'll do it again very soon, possibly tomorrow. So until next time, adios.
See ya.